Welcome to Destination Murder, the true crime podcast.
Each week the hosts, that's us, BFS Megan
and Tegan,
cover stories from a new part of the world.
Get ready to combat your travel bug and feed your true crime obsession.
What's up, Tegan?
Oh, you know, just in the throes of moving.
Yeah. Tegan's moved into her new apartment, and lucky for her, it snowed on the day that she did.
Yeah.
It has not been fun.
Snowed all of winter, and then I woke up moving day to snow on the ground. The U-Haul may have slid a couple times, but it's fine.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was. And I just moved to an area that's very hilly, too, so it was very scary. I was very concerned.
I can imagine. They probably don't put snow tires on those U-Hauls.
No. And they don't have four-wheel drive, I can tell you that.
Oh, dear.
Our U-Haul was from Arizona, so I'm sure that they weren't, like, snow tires.
That's so funny. It's so weird how U-Haul will just have, like, the license plates of wherever the truck came from, and they're like, meh, it's in BC now, but it's still Arizona.
Yeah. I don't really understand, but it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's lovely and snowing. I woke up yesterday, and I woke up to a text, and that was from my boyfriend, Mike, and he's like, look outside. And I was like, what? And it was snowing! I love it so much.
Yeah, It's nice to look at when you're not moving, and it's nice when you don't have to drive in it. I overlook a big hill from my bedroom, and there was probably like 15-20 kids just tobogganing down it all day yesterday.
That's so fun.
So cute. Yeah. But it was a long moving day. I started at 8 and finished at about 11 p.m. last night, and then I got up at 7 a.m. this morning and unpacked our kitchen and our living room. So everything's unpacked. Everything's put together. We have to do one more trip to grab a couple more things from our old apartment, but it's nice. Done. Almost done.
You got like the bulk of it done.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Can't wait to visit once Corona's over.
I know. You're going to love it. And because of my moving and my packing, I have a very, very, very short case for you today.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Because I'll be starting us all this week.
Yeah, nice little segue.
Mm-hmm. So I got Kosovo, and I thought it was really funny because it's not funny at all, but when I went to look up my case, basically the only thing I could find was the Kosovo war and the ethnic cleansing that happened there. So I thought it was kind of interesting that you talked about an ethnic cleansing last week, and then all I could find for my case was ethnic cleansing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Kosovo is, like, contested. I know it does have its own government, but a lot of people in Serbia consider it part of Serbia. But people in Kosovo consider it its own country. So, yeah.
So I wanted to cover that because I think that it's important. I think if you have time to look it up and research a little bit about it, you definitely should. Because it's definitely something that I don't have a lot of information on and didn't actually really know much about I pulled Kosovo, but I just didn't have enough time to actually really write a good story about it.
Yeah, you don't want to half-ass it.
Yeah.
When it's so important.
Yeah, so shout out to my dad. He found me this case. It's really weird because a lot of the Kosovo cases, they're all not in English. So this is like, I couldn't even get a lot of information because all of the articles with like all of the information were either in Albanian or Serbian. not really sure which. So it was really hard to find a articles with English.
Yeah, and then if you translate the entire page on Google,
it just does not make sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so I will be doing the Blanca family murder. So my sources are two Telegraph articles and a Top Channel article. So the murder of the Blanca family in Gjilan is considered one of the biggest crimes that happened in Kosovo, besides the ethnic cleansing. That's what the article said, biggest crime that happened. I was like, I don't think so, but if you want to. So don't even have an exact date for this, but sometime in February of last year, during like the beginning half of February, Valdetta Blanca, a 45-year-old policewoman, killed her two brothers, her mother, and her father before killing herself. Valdetta had been a police officer for 18 years, working in the police station of Gjilan as a traffic police officer. She originally worked in Pristina and then moved to Gjilan 5 years ago. I guess 6 years ago now. Although the details of these murders are covered in a veil of mystery, it is known that everyone that was killed was killed from the same weapon used by the police woman, and that effectively a victim was found in every corner of the house.
Wow.
Like, yeah, that's really sad.
Yeah. Also, the way that's worded sounds very creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, not looking so great. So the victims were allegedly each shot to death with two bullets in the head, assassination style. Sources reported that the older brother, Fisnik Blanca, was killed by his sister while he was sleeping in his bedroom, and then her father, Zekrik. Oh, no, that's not how you pronounce that. That's Zakir, who was 70, and her other brother, Blair, were killed in the living room while her mother, Nefi, who was 64, was killed in the kitchen. Apparently, Valdetta didn't kill herself immediately, and for several hours, she just watched their lifeless bodies and finally took her own life behind the front door of the house.
Ugh.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, like, it's weird to me, like, how they know that, because she killed herself. I guess they can tell by, like, the state of decomposition and, like, rigor mortis and stuff, but, like, was she just sitting there, or was she actually sitting and watching
their bodies? It's almost like they're, like, we have proof that she was just sitting there watching the bodies, but she could have, like, sat there and been like, what did I do? Or sat there and been like working the courage up to take her own life.
I don't know, it just was like, okay, all right then, if that's what you believe she did. Kind of very creepy. I don't know if translating from Albanian or Serbian to English just gives it an extra flair of dramatics, but
I'm sure that's it.
Yeah. So the police station commander, Alban Rushimi, his deputy, Nasir Rahami, chief of operations, Niazi Kolgeki, and a civil sector official have been suspended following the murder-suicide case. I'm not sure why they were suspended. I'll talk about that, my one view that might have been why they were suspended, but there's a lot of people to be suspended for her doing that.
So they suspended her because she did that, or because
So she killed, like, herself.
Any investigation afterwards?
So she killed herself, so her family, entire family and herself are dead, but her police station commander, the deputy commander, the chief of operations, and a civil sector employee from her station have all been suspended.
I wonder if they denied her, like, mental health assistance and she had come forward to them?
I'm not sure. There is one, I'll talk about it in a second.
Okay.
One reason why I think that they could have been suspended, but yeah, I don't know. Their suspension was recommended by the inspectorate. And when I looked up what the inspectorate was, I was like trying to put it into translate. I was like, does this mean something that we just don't have? And I ended up finding bill of police official stuff for Kosovo, basically guidelines and almost bylaws of what the police can kind of do. But they described the inspectorate as the police inspectorate of the Republic of Kosovo established by the law of the police inspectorate, which
does... It's a circle.
Yeah. What does that mean? So I'm guessing this person is kind of the person who holds down the law, I guess, of the police.
Like a district attorney or something? Or...
Yeah, I think so. We'll go with that.
Okay.
So the Kosovo police confirmed that Valdetta had mental problems. We don't know which. The police told the media that Valdetta had been diagnosed with her problems earlier on, and the police said that Valdette's service weapon had been taken away, but the media unofficially learned that the murders were committed with her service gun, which she wasn't supposed to have possession of. So that's the only thing that I can think of is that's why those people were suspended, but how did she get her gun back?
I wonder if they're suspended because they never actually took her gun away.
Oh, maybe. But if she's not supposed to have a gun, why does she have a gun? Also, she's a traffic police officer.
Why does she need a gun in the first place?
Yeah.
That's so silly.
I don't know. I could maybe get, a taser or some sort of, other weapon if you're, a
police officer. Like a baton.
Officer. Yeah, because, aren't, traffic police, the stop go,
Yeah, when and you're, pulling people over for speeding.
Yeah. So, I don't know why she had a gun in the first place. Yeah, so that's the only reason why I can think of that. According to some of the family's relatives, the family seemed to get along, but they were obviously hiding their problems. So,
just like every family.
Yeah, no one walks around going, well, let me tell you, unless you're me.
Let me tell you about my familial issues.
That kind of just reminds me of a meme that I saw. There was one that was when I accidentally overshare on a first date. all your emotional trauma, and you're please don't leave me. Just completely continues the cycle.
At least you know now.
Now you know why I'm crazy. At least there's no false advertising.
Yeah. Of what you're going to get into, you know right now.
Now you know why I'm single. So back to Valdite. Her relatives said, in fact, Valdite and her brothers had not yet formed their own families, which may have been one of the reasons of the disagreements and quarrels with their parents. So I'm guessing they all still lived at home. And I mean, Valdite was 45. I don't know how old her brothers were. Also don't know kind of what the, social kind of protocols are. But I'm sure that her parents probably were not expecting their kids to continue living with them at the age of 45. Or maybe it's because she didn't have kids and they wanted grandkids and none of their children were leaving the nest.
Maybe in Kosovo you don't move out of your parents' place unless you're married.
Yeah, so maybe they were please get out of our house, find a husband, find a wife. Yeah, and that is the story of the Blanca family murder, That's all the information I could find. Everything else was in Serbian or Albanian, and it just wasn't working. I promise next week's episode will be better from my end. Because I will have more time.
Yeah. Tegan has had a very hectic week, to say the least. Wow.
It's a pretty interesting case. I wish there was more information about it.
Yeah. I would like to know more.
Well, it's about a year old now, so maybe there's not more because, like, they haven't... Oh, I was going to say maybe because they haven't gotten to court yet. They can't really go to court.
I know. I was going to be like, oh, did they catch anyone or, like, whatever? Like, wait. No. They knew. They know what happened. It's a murder-suicide. Yeah, that's very sad. Murder-suicides are always, like, horribly sad.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what she was struggling with, and I wonder if she was getting any help for.
It sounds like they knew she had some mental health problems, but...
And obviously they were serious enough to be... They were like, maybe she shouldn't have a gun. So, because that was the reason why they had taken her service weapon away from her to start.
It was because of the mental health, yeah. That's so unfortunate. So sad.
Alrighty. Megan, your turn.
My turn. I think that was the shortest case we've ever had.
Yeah, it was one page. And usually my page, like, cases are, like, between, like, 3 to 7 pages long.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
We can put up some articles about the ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
On our show notes, so.
And we have something else that we want to talk about at the end of the episode as well. So we'll give you guys some other information at the end to make up for my lacking of story time. Anyways, it's Megan's turn.
So stay tuned. It's my turn, and today I'm taking you to Ghana. So I got my sources this week from a BBC article by Joel Gunter, an Africa Eye documentary, Wikipedia, the Tiger Eye Foundation, a Guardian article by Agence France Press, a 2019 Global News article, and the International Press Institute. Also, one thing I just wanted to talk about first, well, not talk about, but just note, is that when I was looking up this case, so many articles I found were on BBC Pidgin. And I did not know that BBC had an entire website, an entire thing in Pidgin. I thought BBC was just English.
What the hell is Pidgin?
Pidgin is like it's sort of like a dialect of English where it's very simplified grammar. And I looked it up because I didn't actually know what Pidgin, like where Pidgin was spoken. It's spoken in places where there are multiple like languages, and then Pidgin kind of is like English and kind of bridges the gap. I don't know if it's always English.
I think that's funny because I was thinking like it was like an app. I thought it was like, you know, like you can watch CBC shows on Gem. Like I thought it was like a branch of the BBC.
No. It's like BBC News Pidgin. Let me like read. Okay, so this is just a random article. Disbiji words of Nigeria Vice President Prof. Yemi Osinbajo asked Tori Pipo question for Lagos on Wednesday happen for Shasha area of Oyo State. So you can nearly understand it, but there are a bunch of words from different languages. It's really cool.
I feel like that would be a very difficult language to pick up if you don't already have like some like basic knowledge of the other languages.
Yeah, I don't know. It was really cool because I could like nearly understand it, but not quite. And I was like, I speak Pidgin. Okay. Anyways. Okay. So I'm doing the murder of Ahmed Hussein Suali. So on the night of January 16th, 2019, 31-year-old Ahmed Hussein Suali was spending time with his family, as he did every night. Ahmed lived in Ghana's capital city of Accra, which is a city on the southern coast of Ghana. And I'm pretty sure There's only a southern coast of Ghana, so I don't know why I said that. The family sat outside the house in the warm evening, and Ahmed left them to go check on his nephew, who was at home sick that day. He got in his car to leave and set off. As he stopped at an intersection just down the road, a block from his house, two men on motorcycles pulled up and shot him from close range. Ahmed was hit in the neck, and the injury caused him to hit the gas and accelerate uncontrollably into a storefront. One of the gunmen then walked up, calmly shot Ahmed twice more through the broken window, directly into Ahmed's chest, killing him. Witnesses then say the gunman turned calmly and slowly towards them, smiling, lifted a finger to his lips, as if to hush everyone watching. So, Tegan, who was Ahmed Hussein Swali, and why had he just been murdered? Ahmed grew up in the small town of Ulansi in northern Ghana. As a teenager, he grew more and more outspoken about politics and corruption, and at 18 left to study political science at the University of Ghana in Accra. Ahmed was a deep thinker and patient and very passionate about his work and like corruption in government, I guess. At university, he was introduced to a man by the name of Anas Eremayao Anas. Anas was the founder and CEO of an investigative journal firm called Tiger Eye Private Investigations, or Tiger Eye PI. A global award-winning journalist, Anas was born in northern Ghana and grew up in a military barracks in Accra with his family, eventually attending journalism school at the Ghana Institution of Journalism. Anas's most powerful tool in his investigations is his anonymity. There you go. He wears a disguise, which is a bucket hat with a bunch of like strings of beading down the front to cover his face, to keep himself unrecognizable and able to go undercover during his investigations. So after meeting Anas and becoming involved with Tiger Eye PI, Ahmed grew into being a high-profile, undercover investigative journalist in Ghana. The Tiger Eye PI firm ruffled feathers throughout Ghana. The firm focuses on human rights journalism and exposing corruption in Ghana and West Africa. The undercover investigative journalist work Ahmed and Anas performed at Tiger Eye had led to exposing traffickers, murderers, and corrupt public officials. One of Ahmed's recent works was investigating people being murdered for their body parts that were then sold and trafficked for ritual magic in Malawi, an investigation that had to end early due to the journalist nearly being killed after being mistaken for killers themselves. So Ahmed is doing some serious investigative journalism, kind of like on the front lines of journalism, I guess you could say.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah, yeah. On May 6th, 2018, Tiger Eye released a documentary film called Number 12 about corruption in African football and FIFA. So football as in soccer, not American football. The documentary named Number 12 because corruption was the 12th player on the football field, exposed and implicated pretty much the entirety of the Ghana Football Association. The documentary was a result of nearly 2 years of Anas and a team of Tiger Eye journalists, I believe including Ahmed, going undercover amongst referees, coaches, and Ghana Football Association officials. Nearly 100 football officials were caught on hidden camera taking bribes. In one example, Anas records a referee taking a bribe to sway the outcome of a match leading up to the FIFA World Cup in Russia. In another example, the president of the Ghana Football Association, Kwesi Nantachi, also high up in FIFA, was also caught on tape accepting a big bribe. The documentary exposed not just Ghanaian officials, but also international coaches and refugees. Sorry, and referees, not refugees.
Those dang refugees taking so many
so many bribes.
Gosh dang it.
As a result, the president of Ghana completely dismantled the executives of the Ghana Football Association, and all games in the country were put on hold. The referees committee was dissolved, and all individuals caught accepting bribes in the documentary were told to resign. Some of them were acquitted, though.
I would just like to say, like, I don't know if this is just, like, me just not really caring about sports that much, But I think that it's actually crazy that the government had to disband a soccer organization. Well, I guess it is kind of like there, but like still. Also, yeah. How do referees manage to like sway the outcome?
They can make calls against a team to favor one team. For example, if someone kicks it out of bounds, he could call it and say that the other team actually kicked it out of bounds to keep the ball in possession of the other team, like the team that's paying him off, essentially.
Yeah, I get that, but I also don't understand how, like, you still have to score goals, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's not guaranteed, but it's like, the ref is going to make it harder for the team that he doesn't favor to win.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And think of it as like, so soccer in Ghana is like a massive industry. So think of it more like a massive industry that makes a lot of money than just like a fun sport. Like, it's huge. So moreover, Kwesi Nantachi, the president of the Ghana Football Association, was completely banned from FIFA. Like, he had a life ban from FIFA and was fined nearly $500,000 for taking a bribe. I also should mention that in terms of press freedom, Ghana ranks number one in Africa and number 23 in the world at the time of Ahmed's murder, according to the Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index. To give some context, in 2020, the UK was 35th on the list, the US is 45th, and Canada is number 16. So it's not like the press is being suppressed in Ghana.
They're clearly doing a good job of giving writers the freedom to,
yeah,
to establish their stories.
So even though the press is very free in Ghana, the documentary number 12... really upset some very powerful people. To those who participate in the sport in Ghana, football is like a religion. I'm sure that in their eyes, having this team of journalists expose the top officials was like nearly sacrilegious. It was horrible. Fans probably were really upset at the football executives, and the football executives were probably really pissed off at the team of journalists because they'd exposed how they were like making all of their money. So a Ghanaian member of parliament by the name of Kennedy Agapong decided he had to out all of these journalists because he was quote unquote offended by the undercover methods they used. He literally publicly gave death threats against Anas and his team, saying they needed to be hanged. Kennedy Agapong also happened to own a popular TV news network in Ghana. After making his comments about Anas and the Tiger Eye firm, Agapong did some digging and found photographs of Ahmed. Agapong then broadcasted these photographs of Ahmed's face on the TV network. When he did, he also revealed the neighborhood where Ahmed lived and his full name. Kennedy Agapong angrily then proceeded to set out a mob against Ahmed by saying, quote, "If you meet him somewhere, slap him, beat him. Whatever happens, I'll pay," unquote. He even tells the camera people to zoom in on Ahmed's face, telling them to show it big and clear for everyone to see.
That shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah, so essentially he put a bounty out for Ahmed.
And I love how he was like, slap him.
Yeah.
That's not the type of broadcasting and publishing that should be happening.
No, not at all. So after Ahmed was murdered, Agapong completely denied orchestrating the murder. He said that he had no issue at all. He was not offended by Ahmed and the investigative methods that the Tiger Eye PI team used in the investigation. And police should actually look into the people he'd exposed in his works. Like, he didn't put a bounty out on him for television. That was just, you know, you misunderstanding the TV broadcast. No.
That's why you think about things before you say them out loud, because they will always come back to bite you in the butt.
Words have consequences.
Yes.
Trump.
They have meaning. Wait, also, I just, sorry, sidebar. I just saw an article about Trump, which kind of resonated with me a little bit. He had a button in the Oval Office that he pressed, and yeah. every time he pressed it, someone would bring him a Diet Coke.
Oh my God.
And he was drinking up to 12 cans of Coke a day.
That's
and
insane.
I thought I had
a Coke problem.
A Coke problem. Not the drug, the soft drink. A
Coca-Cola problem.
I love Coca-Cola. But yeah, I thought I had a problem. I clearly don't, so I'm just going to continue living my life the way I've been living it. But
yeah,
so Biden had that button removed from the office, so no one brings him cold Diet Cokes. Sorry.
Oh, no.
Sorry. Sidebar.
It's okay. So the Ghana Journalists Association called Ahmed's death an assassination, and honestly, I share that opinion. In early February of 2019, less than a month after Ahmed's murder, police arrested six people in connection with the crime. However, police said that there was, at that point, there was no strong evidence against these people. They were just convincing suspects, I guess you could say. The same day that police announced the arrest, Nantachi, the Ghana Football Association president and the FIFA executive, whose life ban from football was triggered by the Number 12 documentary, made his first public comment about the murder. He told a Ghanaian TV station that he had been set up by the Ghana Football Association, and it was actually them who had paid Tiger IPI to trick him into being bribed during the documentary. Ranting on TV, he also claimed that Anas tried to blackmail him before releasing the documentary, saying that he had tried to get $150,000 or else Anas would release Number 12. There's nothing to substantiate any of those claims. It's just a guy that was exposed for his lack of morals, ranting and raving. Unfortunately for the hunt for justice, the six men arrested were released from police custody and cleared as suspects. In an interview 1 year after Ahmed's death, when still no advances in the investigation had been made, Anas said he believed that because people in football are wealthy and powerful people, there may be some behind-the-scenes influence making sure the police don't apprehend Ahmed's killers. It's now been over 2 years since Ahmed's murder, and there's still no advances in the investigation. Nobody has been arrested, charged, or prosecuted, and Ahmed's family accuses the police of abandoning the investigation. After his murder, Tiger IPI and Anas released a tribute video for Ahmed. In it, Anas says that Ahmed was passionate about the work that he did, and that Ahmed was also the imam of the group, often leading the Tiger IPI team in prayers when things got really tough. He was a senior investigative journalist in the PI firm and is dearly missed. Anas says that Ahmed Hussein Swali was truly a soldier of righteousness, a man of peace who wanted to make the world a better place. That is the still unsolved murder of Ahmed Hussein Swali.
Wow, that's kind of crazy. I feel like I kind of heard about that because it was like quite a big deal when all of this went down within the FIFA organization.
Well, this was actually after that. Oh. Yeah, so in 2015, there was this big FIFA scandal where a bunch of executives were exposed for bribery, and they were all like fired, I guess, or asked to step down. The documentary was 3 years after that.
Oh my goodness.
So that just goes to show you that there's a lot of corruption when it comes to football.
Yeah. Holy.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy that it hasn't even been solved either.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, did the member of parliament actually pay off the guys that murdered him, or was that just an empty threat, or
or, you know, a lot of the time I think people say things that they don't necessarily mean because they just say it out of anger, and when you have the ability to speak about that kind of stuff on a large public forum, some people don't understand that that's not what you should be doing, and they will follow up on the actions that you ask them to do because they just don't comprehend that it's not something you should do.
Yeah. Especially when he literally says, I will pay.
Yeah.
Like, he said, I'll pay. Yeah, so.
Or, you know, like, you think that, like, that's going to make you look good in their eyes or something. And so you want to be like, well, yeah, I did this for you kind of thing, so.
Yeah.
Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Yeah, but this Tiger IPI firm has really, really interesting, like, undercover investigative documentaries and journalism. So I'll link like Anas Arimiao, Anas's website and like the Tiger IPI website in our show notes. And you can, if you're interested, you can read more of the stories that they've done. Recently I was like looking on their Facebook page and they did investigative undercover work. They did like a coronavirus series.
Oh.
So the latest one that they released was like back in, I think like October or September maybe. But it was a story about how hospital workers in some places in Ghana are selling their PPE so they make money.
Like, that just doesn't compute with me.
I don't know. So I don't know. I didn't watch the full thing. I just read the description. So I don't know if it's like the frontline workers or if it's like the kind of like higher ups who are like the people who are ordering it are like ordering 10, selling one to like make some money off of it. I don't know, but yeah, it looked really interesting.
I swear this world is it goes all the way to the top.
So it was a really short cases this week. I flew through mine. Mine was like 5 pages.
Oh wow.
Yeah, or maybe no, it was just 4. I've got just notes at the end, but yeah, I went down the rabbit hole with this case because I was just so interested in all of the different journalism pieces that they'd done.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. When you find something like that off of one of the cases that it's kind of gives you access to more cool things to look at.
Yeah, and I'll also put the like the tribute video for Ahmed on our show notes because it's very nice. And I wasn't able to like find a lot of information about Ahmed because he was like a high profile undercover journalist. There wasn't a lot of like information about him because he needed to stay private. So hopefully if you watch that, you might get a better sense of who he was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Everybody go watch that.
Go watch it. There will be a quiz next week.
Yeah. We're warning you now. You better be prepped.
So let's jump into what we have to talk about next.
Tico. Okay. Yeah. So if you live in the Lower Mainland, and especially if you're a woman, you've probably already heard about this. A couple of women have gone missing in our area. The police say that none of it is connected. I don't know.
I don't know what would be worse, if all of these missing women are connected or if all of them are not connected. Because if they're connected, that means there's one guy abducting women. If they're not connected, that means there's like 7 guys.
Yeah. I don't know. There's also apparently been women that have been like tried to get pulled into like white vans and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's just important to like keep vigilant of your surroundings and, you know, make sure that you're safe, you know.
And don't go hiking alone. I know right now going outside for walks is one of the few things you can do because of the coronavirus restrictions. But I believe multiple of these women, their cars were found near parks. So just be very careful. Don't go alone.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, don't go walking around at night by yourself. and just a friendly reminder that carrying weapons on you is not the smartest move. I think a lot of people are buying those little key ring things that are kind of like knives on the end. like they're really sharp so that you can, it's kind of like a serrated.
Yeah, so you can like actually stab someone with your keys instead of just like holding yeah. them in your fist.
That's not, that is a weapon. You can get charged for that. And when things are needed in close combat, it's usually not the best thing to use because it can be easily turned on you and you have to be in a very close vicinity to your attacker. My roommate just got this little keychain. I think I'm going to get one too. But if you press the SOS button on it, it like makes this awful screeching sound and it has like a strobe light so you can kind of stun someone with it. So maybe something like that would be a little bit more.
Yeah, get a laser for your keychain so you can like point it in their eyes yeah. and blind them.
And if deafen you need them.
To defend yourself.
So I think I'm going to grab one of those too. But yeah, just stay vigilant. I found information for 3 women, who have gone missing in our area. I haven't been able to, I know that there's been more, but I can't find, I'm not sure if maybe they got found because I did look at the BC RCMP missing persons list. So Trina Hunt, a 48-year-old white woman was last seen at her Heritage Mountain residence on Monday, January 18th. She's described as 5'4 and 120 pounds and was last seen wearing a puffy black North Face jacket and Magneta Cloudflyer running shoes, which is kind of creepy because I know the Heritage Mountain area pretty well and it's like nice, like you wouldn't expect something to happen over there. Yeah. Next is Shailene Keller Bell. Bell is a 23-year-old mother. She's been missing since January 30th and was last seen on the 9300 block of Edwards Street in Chilliwack. She's Caucasian, 5'2", weighing 85 pounds. She has bleach blonde hair, brown eyes. Police say that she's associated with a gray 2021 Hyundai Tucson with the BC license plate CR975V. And lastly, I found Trisha Peggy Penrose. She was last seen on January 20th at her residence. Police believe that she has she's in Kelowna, Lake County, or Vernon. Trisha is a white female who's 40 years old, 5'7", 130 pounds, with long brown hair and brown eyes. So, if you have any information about these women, we would suggest contacting your local police, because they have families and they need to come home. Other than that, just be careful, everyone.
Yeah, it's always a good reminder to be very careful and vigilant, especially if you are a woman. Unfortunately, that puts a bounty on your head. Not really, but sometimes it feels like it.
Yeah. Should we talk about happy things now?
Yeah. Are there any Harry Styles updates that I should know about?
None that I've seen. Did we talk about... Yeah, we talked about no tattoo Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just... I really haven't had much time to look up anything. I've been so exhausted. I don't know why, but I've literally, this last week, I've come home, I've packed for like 2 hours, and then I've fallen asleep in front of the fireplace at my apartment at like 8 o'clock every single night. And my roommates just like come over to me and they're like, Tegan, it's 11 o'clock, let's go to bed now. Just like passed out on the floor. Yeah, so packing has really taken all of my energy. But I'm really happy. I wish I could show you guys all my view, but I don't really think that that's the
no, it's probably idea. Not good to show people where you yeah. live.
Especially because from my view it's like very clear where I am.
Live.
Yeah. But it's a gorgeous view. I'm really happy here and it's going to be great. Hopefully less technical issues because my Wi-Fi is so much better here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think we were on like the Telus 90 or something before, and now we're on the Telus 130, and we have optic. So we've got the like nice Wi-Fi or internet. I don't know. Fiber optic.
The bougie net.
Yeah.
The bougie internet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I sort of have, I don't know, it's not really a life update, it's not really anything interesting, but I just want to talk about how much I love The Sims. That game, I love it. My sister got me like a game pack for my birthday last month, and I got so many new objects. I just really like building it. I like pretending like I am an architect. I got the pack with like a lot of Japanese influence.
Oh, cool.
Architecture, so I can build like Japanese houses. So today I'm going to build a copy of my apartment from when I lived in Japan.
That's so funny. I think it's hilarious that like your favorite part is like the building part, because that's mine too. My sister and I, whenever we used to play Sims, I would make the people and I would make the house, and then it'd be like, I'm done. Yeah. You play the characters. I don't need this anymore. So she'd always be like, Tegan, let me control. And I'm like, just a second, let me finish designing everything and then you can play.
Yeah, I love The Sims.
Yeah.
I can like, sometimes I have dreams about my Sims builds from when I was like 10 years old. I'm not even kidding you.
I don't have that, but I'm glad that you do. I'm glad that your Sims aren't forgotten from 15 years ago. I'm pretty sure Megan has a Sims layout of me and Harry Styles. She also has one of me in Amsterdam, in a little apartment or a little house, like neighboring Megan's house.
Yeah, I built like a little, I like building so it looks like real architecture. So I'll like look at a photo of like Amsterdam, like canal houses, and then I'll build that. And then like I've been in a bunch because I know people in Amsterdam and I've been to their houses. And so I like copy kind of like the inside, and then I like building like Japanese houses as well, because it's a very different type of architecture, and I've also been there, so I kind of know it. But yeah, I built a Tegan, and then I built myself and my boyfriend. And so my boyfriend and I in the Sims game, this is so weird, people are gonna be like, why are you talking about this?
It's what we do for fun.
Yeah, so I built like my house, and it's like four floors, and it has like an attic, and our bedroom is in the attic, and then next to it Tegan lives in a studio apartment above like a little cafe bar, and it's just so cute.
Yeah, we have a good time. Megan sends me updates, she sends me pictures, and it makes me just as happy as I'm sure it makes her.
Yes, I enjoy The Sims. Yeah, I also watch a lot of Sims YouTube content, which is really weird.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. It's pretty weird. But my roommate Kyla does do that as well, so.
She watches Sims YouTube videos?
Yeah, she's obsessed with Sims.
Oh my god. I think me and Kyla have so much to talk about.
I know. She plays Sims probably just as much as you. But haven't you played like 2 weeks worth?
I've played over 400 hours in the last year. So I don't know how much that is, but I think it's like 17 days.
Oh, Lord, Megan. Almost all of February.
Yeah, almost all of February. Okay, February is a perfect rectangle.
I know, this month year, is great.
It starts on a Sunday and it ends on a Saturday, and it is just perfect.
Brilliant.
Unless you have a calendar that starts on a Monday.
Yeah, then it's screwed up.
Then it sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought I was going to have to go out and buy more plants for my apartment, because I was like, plants. I have plants. And now I don't know where to put all my plants. So a good thing that I haven't bought more yet, although I have found something that I can install so that I can hang some like plants off of one of my walls. So I might do that, and then I'll buy some more plants. But my floor plants, because nice. I got some big boys that, like, can't float.
yeah.
off of my wall. But yeah, just unpacking, and I'm just excited to live in my new house. It's so pretty.
It's so pretty and new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this place is 5 years old compared to my old apartment, which was 31 years old. So upgrades, people, upgrades.
Yeah, your old apartment was really nice looking for, like, it looked, you could tell it was oldish, but, like, it only looked like maybe 10, 15 years old.
Yeah, no, it was kept up well. Yeah, mm-hmm. And if anyone is looking for a 3-bedroom apartment in the Lower Mainland, hit me up, because my landlord was great. So if you need a place to live, you could possibly live in my old house.
Mm-hmm. It has a beautiful deep green feature wall.
Yeah. Hand-painted by yours truly. Who wouldn't want that? Yeah. I should really just go sign every corner of the walls.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shall we pull some contrarinos?
Contrarinos? Yes, we shall. Also, while Megan's doing this pulling part, I have one more update. I bought myself a label maker. And I just want to go around my house and literally label everything. I'm obsessed.
Fork.
Yes, I really might just do that just because I love it. It's one of the, it's not like a printer one. It's like a, you squeeze the handle and it punches it into the sticker. So it's like raised writing, and it's just so much fun to use. I love it.
I love organization.
Me too.
Okay, Tegan, are you ready to know where you're going?
I am.
You are going to Georgia, USA.
Woohoo! That's where Queer Eye's based out of.
Woo!
Cool, I'm excited. Where's Megan going?
I'm going to Lebanon.
Finally joining me over here in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting.
Okay. Rate, review, subscribe. It helps us out a lot. Follow us on Instagram at Destination Murder Pod. Make sure to leave Tegan a nice comment on Instagram.
Yeah, please stroke my ego a little bit.
Yeah. And that's it. We will be in her ear holes next week, and I'm gonna say goodbye in Ghanaian, Makrel or Nanteyi. I believe I did not look up how to pronounce that because it was last minute and I totally forgot. Makro Nantuyi.
So I just looked up how to say goodbye in Serbian, and it starts with a Z. Bogum? What does Siri say?
Svogum.
Svogum.
You were close.
Svogum.
Okay, bye.
Okay, goodbye. We love you and stay safe and
happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day. I hope that you have love in your life because you do, because we love you. I just blew you a kiss. I hope you caught it.